Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's Room 104, it's Kieran and Gav here, and to look back at all the things we should be watching when we're not listening to Room 104, on FM 104, of course, we are joined by Olivia Fahey from Geek Ireland. We're going to chat about a big movie that's been in the cinemas recently that's just coming out on home rentals, the Disney Plus show, which explores mental health, which is getting some great feedback and reception at the moment, and all the drama from the Formula One at the weekend. But first, Dune is on Sky from Friday, Olivia.
Yes, very exciting, especially after its monumental wins. Well, maybe not so monumental, but I thought it was monumental wins for them, considering they were nominated, the most nominated film that year, and, you know, they walked away with the most awards at the end of the day. So that's kind of what you want to happen, really.
What did you think of Dune?
Okay, I thought it was grand. It definitely was visually spectacular. I thought that everybody was cast really, really well. But for me, it was definitely a part one of a two-part film. And I was sort of sitting there once there's a big action sequence towards the end of the second act. And as you go into act three, you are kind of sitting there going, all right, lads, where are we going to be wrapping this up here? Oh, they might do it here. No, we're still going. All right. And it is a bit drawn out towards the end for me. Up until a certain point, I thought, do you know what? This is like a 5-star film. Definitely knocked it down to 4 stars for me.
Is it not just a poor man's Star Wars in some sense?
Okay, as a massive Star Wars fan, I actually take a bit of offence to that.
I
could see sort of where you're coming from, but it's like, that's only if you break it down to the very, very bare bones of like the Phantom Menace. They spend a lot more time on their desert planet looking for spice. And hilariously, when we were watching the Book of Boba Fett with looking at the pikes and the spice runners and things like that, you do kind of look at it going, oh, that's actually very similar, all right? So in that sense, yes, there are some similarities between the two, but the overall story arc, I think, is different enough, and the world building is different enough to warrant it.
Okay,
so.
Because like the poster even has a guy in a hood, you know what I mean? And like Timothy Chalamet is wearing, like, and he looks a lot like some Star Wars characters of the last three movies, those Timothy Chalamet. I love Zendaya. She can do nothing wrong for me. And she's got such a wealth of different experiences now as an actor. How amazing is her performance in this? Because I think she's the standout from this movie for me. Maybe that's just me just being a little bit of Zendaya super fan.
In Dune, you mean the film that she's barely in it for 2 seconds? Do you think she was the best?
She's great in everything she does. I love her in this. I really, really do. I think she stands out in this for me.
Is this just a cynical?
She does stand out. It's just a case that she's just not in it, is the thing. She's like, she features very like little in these kind of visions that Paul is having, but she literally only actually comes into it where she is speaking and, you know, giving a bit of personality to her character literally in the last 5 to 10 minutes of the film, and that's it. Now, she is going to feature more prominently in the part two, which hopefully should be starting to film soon, because Josh Brolin was just on Hot Ones, eating the chicken wings, and he did say that he was already starting his diet to get into shape for Dune Part 2. So they must be starting to shoot maybe over the summer. We might be seeing more shots on Instagram of him and Jason Momoa in... where do they film it again? somewhere deserty. I can't remember exactly where they filmed it. But yeah, so hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of her in the sequel, but we'll also be seeing a lot more of Javier Bardem, who I also think has a lot more to give to his character as well.
Let's have a little listen to Timothy Chalamet talking about the movie.
So, huge gratitude for this whole process. I hope we get to make another one, and in the role where we didn't, I'm already like hugely grateful just for this, in this moment.
Well, thank you guys for chatting, and I want to...
Yeah, he seems to have really, really enjoyed it, and I don't know, he seems to be overwhelmed with emotion.
Is he a little bit boring, Timothy Chalamet? Am I wrong in saying that he's a little bit boring?
Everyone's entitled to their opinion, is what I would say. I disagree. I think he's actually a very interesting young man. I think he takes on a lot of roles that are different to what other men his age might be doing. Like, I know that he was in the running for Spider-Man at one point when Tom Holland was auditioning. And while, yeah, he probably would have made a very good Peter Parker, he does look back on that and say, do you know what? I'm actually really glad that I didn't get it. A, because Tom does such a great job, but also because it left me open to then go down all these other roles and do these other films instead. So I think his repertoire, I think, is quite strong for an actor of his age. I really enjoyed him in Little Women. I thought he was very good in that as well.
God, they really had a typecast when they wanted the new Spider-Man, didn't they? Tom Holland, Timothy Chalamet, quite similar characters. Dune was filmed in Jordan in the Middle East. That's where it was.
Jordan, that's the one. Yes, thank you.
Yes. Let's have a look at another thing you've been looking at, Moon Knight on Disney Plus. What is this?
So Moon Knight is another Marvel character who has not had any live action adaptation up until now, played by Oscar Isaac in this installment, and essentially the character in the comics, shall we say, the character of Mark Spector, he becomes an avatar of one of the Egyptian gods, Khonshu, who is the moon god. And essentially, it is his job to then bring justice to those who commit crimes. In the TV series on Disney Plus, we're actually leading with a slightly different character called Stephen Grant. And he's also played by Oscar Isaac. And he discovers that his dreams that he's been having, or, you know, his sleepwalking, may not actually be sleepwalking. And it turns out that himself and Mark are actually sharing the one body, because he has dissociative identity disorder. So basically, Mark and he are having this like internal monologue fight over the body. And then you have Khonshu sort of coming in as well to be like, no, no, I want Mark to have the body because he knows how to activate Moon Knight and the powers that I have given to him. And it's a very interesting observation as to what is DID is kind of the abbreviation for it, what it is and how they're sort of dealing with mental health as a whole. So it's a great series so far. Only episode 3 has landed today, so there's only 3 episodes out so far, and everyone is going crazy for it.
And do you think they deal with, you know, mental health in a sensitive and serious way?
They do. Like, there's no jokes about it up until like the episodes that I've seen. So I've actually seen up until the end of episode 4, and it does dive into it more, I will say, in the next few episodes. So episodes 3 and episode 4, as the character has, it's been established now on the screen. So now we're sort of diving deeper into the backstory, the inner monologues, the kind of fight between the good and the evil sort of within as well. And I think it's done very tentatively, but very cleverly. They had a lot of advisors on the set and advisors with the scripts, and they all spoke very highly of it during the press junkets that we had with them as well. Oscar Isaac in particular was saying how important it was to him to make sure that they got it right, and that they didn't want to portray it in a way that wasn't accurate, but also stay true to the way that they've portrayed it in the comics as well. So everyone was very, very conscious of it, and it shows on the screen.
It's amazing to me that, so say if we go back, right, in the 1990s, superhero movies, TV shows were pretty much non-existent, right? There was the Joel Schumacher Batman films. The less we say about George Clooney's bat nipples, I think the better, to be perfectly honest.
I know,
right?
go on, let's talk about them.
No,
yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger's ice to meet you. No, leave that in the past. Like, the first X-Men movie didn't come out until 2000. Then we had the Ben Affleck Daredevil, Holy Lord, in 2003, God love him. And then Ang Lee's Hulk then 2003, right? Fantastic Four. But back in 1996, Marvel Comics All right, they offered Sony every single Marvel character for $25 million. Sony said, no, we want Spider-Man for 20. They wouldn't put up the extra $5 million for every other Marvel character. I'm kind of glad they didn't, but someone in Sony is getting a red arse because they turned down all these characters. Can you believe, Olivia, that back then they said no to all these characters? Like Captain America, Iron Man and Thor, they thought, no, nobody cares about them. They only care about the mainstream characters. And now we have one that not many people would know in Moon Knight.
I know. It is one of those things of, wouldn't you hate to be that person? When people are saying, it's like, oh, why'd you leave Sony? It's like, I passed on all the Marvel characters. But it's like, as much as they can say, oh yeah, but I secured Spider-Man. It's like, you left this door completely wide open for Disney to swoop in and go, we can make this work. And it's even now, looking back on it, Disney are the ones that are able to make Spider-Man work even better than, you know, Sony can at the moment, which, like, as much as No Way Home was more of a Sony endeavor, the hand of Marvel was very evident in that in comparison to the likes of Morbius. So yeah, like, it's baffling as well, considering there was an Avengers cartoon that was actually quite successful. And even then, looking at that, they still went, no one's going to want to see that in live action.
Isn't that
so
why
it's crazy?
Isn't that why the Avengers movie in the UK had to be called Avengers Assemble? Because there was the cartoon was already called The Avengers. I think that's why in the UK it was called Avengers Assemble. Everywhere else, it was just called The Avengers.
It was actually, I think it was a change in the US as well in the end.
Oh, okay.
The whole Avengers Assemble is actually, it was a tagline in a lot of the comics. So it was decided after, because it was initially announced as just The Avengers and then changed to Avengers Assemble. I actually think it was I'm going to say Black and White, and then people who watched the show will be like, it wasn't always in Black and White. There was a TV show called The Avengers, and it was a man and a woman, and I cannot remember anything else about the plot, but there was another TV show in the UK. And yes, you're right in that sense that for Europe, it was then referred to as Avengers Assemble to avoid clashing with that show, which I think is still on like Dave or Gold at like noon or something like that.
Probably is. But, in between episodes of Top Gear on Dave.
Exactly.
It needs to break up the Top Gear and House of Games and things like that. But it happens quite a few times, I think, that you'll name a film and then realize that you can't call it that in certain countries. I think Zootopia was probably one of the most infamous ones as of late, considering Zootopia, am I right in saying, was some sort of not suitable for children website in Italy or something like that?
I couldn't possibly
confirm or deny that, though.
I have to say, though, like, I don't know what I did in the cinema before superhero movies. You know, sometimes you look back and you go, what did I go to the cinema and watch before superhero movies? I literally can't remember.
I'm definitely on the side of, I think I was always going to see films like this. So, like, I was going to all the Star Wars films, even as a kid. I was going to Lord of the Rings and all the Disney films as well. So I was always kind of in that realm. But like, I also then went to see like Dodgeball 5 times and it's opening like 6 days or something ridiculous like that. And I haven't done like anything like that with any of the Marvel films as such. So it's interesting to see how your tastes and just what's kind of popular at the moment, how it changes over the years.
Yeah, you mentioned Dodgeball, and we have to, because I'm so ignorant about superhero movies. They're not my thing. But you mentioned Dodgeball, like a comedy classic from the past 20 years. And if you think of the mid-2000s, the mid-1990s to the mid-2000s, there were so many kind of comedy classics made. Where are all the comedy classics these days? I don't know.
Where are all the lines like, he's not going to be able to see very well, Cotton. You know?
Dip, dive, dip, dodge.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Come on, dip, dive, dive, duck,
dodge, and dodge. Dodge. Yeah.
I love how you guys just butchered that.
Yeah. Come on.
Patches a hula on. Yes. He gets killed by the look of the Irish sign.
So funny.
Yeah.
Dodgeball is great, but there is also another superhero movie. I mean, we're going to talk about other things than superhero movies, but The Batman, which is like, I feel like it was only in cinemas, is already available to do some home rentals on April 19th.
I know, it was literally a blink and, it's available at home. But I think that's a sign of the times. Like, films aren't actually staying in the cinemas as long as they used to. And I think once they do stop kind of turning over the multi-millions, in theaters than they do tend to shift it to at home rentals kind of quickly. But with the Batman, like, I still know that there's people who have gone to full screenings of it here in Ireland, like on a Thursday or Friday night, and they're like, yeah, it was packed, and you know, it was like their first or second watch at, as it stands. And when you think the film came out more than a month ago, like, usually you'd give it about 70 days or so before putting it at home. I think that was the deal with Shang-Chi before it went on Disney Plus. I think it had to have like 70, 75 days or something like that in theaters before they were moving it onto the streaming platform. So yeah, it's quite quick. But at the end of the day, I think they know that people have just gotten into the habit of staying at home. So there might be a lot more people who are just waiting to watch it at home, which I think for a film like this is actually a missed opportunity for viewers. I think 100%. This was something that you have to see on the big screen, because it is just, like with Dune, it's just visually spectacular. It's like, I thought it was more like a work of art, that kind of like an indie sort of just like really nice to look at film, as opposed to just a superhero film. But then you've got it mixed in with all of these like detective sort of true crime kind of style things, and you're really like following the clues along with it. So like personally, it was, I really enjoyed it, because you'd nearly forget that, you know, Batman's there if he wasn't in his full like cowl. You know, you'd be just like, oh, that's just another detective. Like, oh no, wait, hang on, what's with the ears, dude? Okay.
I wonder if this movie is too dark for the small screen. I wonder how it transitions onto a smaller screen. Now, I know people in their houses, I mean, like, have 50, 60-inch TVs, but it's so intricate. The lighting, the cinematography in this movie is stunning. I just wonder how that's going to transfer onto a small screen.
Yeah, I'd imagine we're going to have, like, very similar tweets going out from people like we did with the final season of, the like, Game of Thrones, or what was that other show that was also really... Oh, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. Yeah. They were both, like, really, really dark shows, to the point that, like, and we're not meaning, like, just the tone. It was just physically dark. You couldn't see it. You had to adjust the brightness on your screen in order to be able to see half of the action that was going on, which, back when the final season of Game of Thrones aired, we had a really busted TV. So basically anything that was, like, really dark or black went into, like, red. Or even, like, if you were watching a soccer game and it was, like, the green pitch, it would just be like red patches on the pitch. It was very, very bad. So like, if you don't have like one of the like the brand new TVs, yeah, it might not work as well. But there are, I think there is enough in the lighting that, and especially like from the stills that I was sent to use for articles and things like that, there's enough lightness in there for it still, you still be able to see what's going on. But yes, it will be probably slightly more on the dark side than you are used to.
Yeah, and the Joker's on Netflix as well. So, I mean, you can go and watch the Joker, then buy the Batman and watch them back to back. And of course, non-Snyderverse films. Not that we're forgetting about his amazing work on the Dark Knight.
Sorry, what were you saying?
come on. Are you seriously going to say that The Dark Knight is not one of the best superhero movies that there's ever been made?
Yeah, but The Dark Knight isn't part of the Snyderverse, technically. The Dark Knight is the Nolan era, and Snyderverse came into it with Henry Cavill's Man of Steel and the casting of Ben Affleck as Batman.
I don't... You're right. You are right about that. But it all stems. The Dark Knight was what kicked all these new Batman movies off.
Well, the Batman Begins, really, because that's what really set the that's what really set the tone. And even looking back on it now, as much as Heath Ledger's performance was like spectacular in The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight itself as a film was brilliant, I actually think Batman Begins is probably a better film from a technical point of view. But just The Dark Knight had the more wow factor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
This is Room 104. It's Kieran and Gav here. We're talking to Olivia Fahy from Geek Ireland about the stuff you should be watching. Now for something completely different. Have a listen to this from last weekend.
Okay, Max, stop the car, please. Stop the car. Stop the car. Try to stop by a fire marshal if you can, please. Stop the car by a fire marshal.
By a fire marshal. Max Verstappen.
The outpouring of sympathy, as you can hear from Kieran there.
The Dutchman, world champion, asterisk world champion for last year, Max Verstappen, breaking down yet again, Olivia. Formula One, it was race number 3 in Australia last weekend. You are a Max Verstappen super fan. I'm going to put it out there. Were you devastated to see him pull to the side of the track yet again?
Oh, I did actually exclaim out loud, like, you've got to be kidding me. Because it is, like, it's reminiscent of, was it Daniel Ricciardo's last season with them, when, like, the two cars just couldn't finish a race? And you're just like, what? I know they put a lot of focus onto last season and that car, when a lot of the teams had shifted focus to the 2022 car, which was actually supposed to be the 2021 car, but that's neither here nor there. But it just baffles me, because you don't see cars actually going up in flames anymore.
No, yeah.
Unless, you know, you crash into them so terribly that you end up exploding your engine a la Roman Grosjean. But like, this is the first time you've actually just seen him, and he's just like pointing at all the flames to the marshals, just being like, you missed a spot, and you missed a spot.
There's
more over here, like,
in.
Come on. It's like, lads, like, can you not see the flames just jutting out of everywhere?
I was concerned for his gloved hand at one point. He was nearly putting it right in the back of the engine. I was like, watch your hand, Max. And the marshal, I mean, normally marshals are great. He was standing there like a spare lemon. Spray the car with the fire extinguisher, please.
Which is so odd, because like, Australia is used to accidents and safety cars and all this. Like, it's one of the oldest Grand Prix like on the roster. But clearly, because they've missed the last 2 years... 3 years? 2 years? 2 years.
2 years.
I've lost track of time.
They haven't been there,
but it's just like,
they've
clearly just gotten out of whack, and they just don't remember what they're supposed to be doing. Or your man is new and he was just like, what? What am I supposed to be doing with this? Like,
Ferrari, though, another dominant performance from them, except on the back straight, the porpoising was insane.
Like, you know, it's one of those things of, I was looking at the Ferrari stats, and I actually rewatched the Schumacher documentary again recently, and like, they had to wait, I think it was like 20 odd years before Schumacher won them another world championship, and it's nearly been 20 years since they won a world championship this time around as well. So 2007 was their last world championship with Kimi Räikkönen, and even then I don't think they won the constructors title. They only won the drivers championship that year. This was their first Grand Slam, which is fastest lap, pole position, led every race of the race. Led every lap of the race. Every race. JD, I'm trying. Am I predicting something there by mistake? But like, they haven't done that since 2010 with Alonso in the Singapore Grand Prix. So like, as much as I'm kind of like, wow, that was like a really dominant performance, and at parts, you know, kind of boring, because you didn't even see Leclerc at all during the highlights, because he was just got off in front. All the action was behind him as such. But yeah, like, I can't begrudge them anything, because Leclerc just seems like such a nice guy, and the team have literally clawed their way back to the top from, you know, finishing not so great the last couple of years. Like, when you finish behind a McLaren, when the McLaren has not been strong the last couple of seasons, like, you know something's gone wrong.
Yeah, you do. And in fairness, the next race is in Italy, I think, which is really weird.
It is in Imola, yeah.
Like, so, like, but then they're going to Miami again. So normally, you know, you get a couple of European races in together, but obviously this is like 23 race season, so they put some random ones in there. You can't imagine, like, the track is the, like, the actual name of the track is the Autodroma Enzo Di Dino Ferrari. So, I mean, I'm sure the
Home
Ferraris
yeah.
are going to be very strong there as well. Honestly, I could see Charles Leclerc winning this complete championship, especially if Red Bull can't get that Renault engine sorted out. I know Christian Horner said it was probably something with the fuel pump this time, but they need to get that engine sorted. If they don't, like, they cannot keep only finishing one car a race. That's not going to work.
No, they can't. And it's with Ferrari being so dominant, like, this is even more dominant than we've seen Mercedes over the last couple of seasons, because even then, it's like, there was still battles. There was still, you know, something else going on. Whereas, like, we're 3 races in, and Leclerc has either been hot on the heels of Verstappen in the second Grand Prix in Jeddah.
Yeah.
Am I right? Yep, there we go. And, but, like, he practically ran away with it in Bahrain, and he definitely ran away with it in Melbourne. So, yeah, you just got to wonder, like, he could have this whole season wrapped up very quickly if there is literally nobody else to challenge him, because unfortunately it doesn't even look like Sainz, who's in the sister Ferrari, can even catch up with him at this stage.
Finally, some love for Britain's George Russell. Finishing
I'm happy for him, because, like, let's face it, it can't be easy, like, being with Williams for so long and then you finally get your drive with Mercedes and then suddenly Mercedes are crap. And you're also partnered with Lewis Hamilton, who is joint most world championships of all time. So, like, it's definitely a lot of pressure for him, but he seems to be taking it well. And, like, not only was out qualifying Hamilton, but he also finished ahead of him on Sunday, which was deserved. He drove better. Hamilton had an unlucky pit stop that he pitted just before a safety car, which meant that Russell, essentially, when he pitted, got a free pit stop, no time lost. I did think it was cheeky of Hamilton to basically start blaming his team, to say, you've screwed me over with that pit stop, because he ended up behind Russell, which, yeah, okay, that's fair. But you know, as a driver, that especially in the Australian Grand Prix, a safety car could happen at any moment. It's the same every year. I don't think there has been one, at least off the top of my head, I can't remember an Australian Grand Prix that has not had at least one safety car or virtual safety car.
Exactly.
So
exactly,
for him to turn around and be like, you screwed me over by pitting me too early, I'm like, well, no, you were saying your tires were gone, so you had to pit. So, like, at the end of the day, Russell drove well, timed his pit stop well, managed his tires better. So, yeah, but he finished ahead of you.
Gavin,
like, it's not rocket science.
Gavin is a Drive to Survive Formula One fan.
I'm a fake fan, basically. So I'm just in it for the drama and the personalities.
Oh, did he hear me giving out about them last week?
Don't you start. Get your hands off my Netflix purified, produced version of a sport. Wait till they do it with golf, Olivia.
I think it's
tennis and golf have put themselves forward, and they said, we want the viewership. We want the.
But I really like the way they could actually call the golf one Drive to Survive 2.
This is,
like, I really want them to call it that. I really hope they do.
Oh, do you know what? I hate to say it, but that is an excellent pun.
Isn't it?
It's very good. Well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm happy with that. We can end it now. Olivia said my pun was good.
Yeah, you know, I don't throw compliments your way very often, no. So I'll give you that one.
Thank you.
Olivia Fahey from Geek Ireland, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Chat soon, guys.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.